BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Lauren Laverne, and this is the Desert Island Discs podcast. Every week, I ask my guests to choose the 8 tracks, book, and luxury they'd want to take with them if they were cast away to a desert island. And, for rights reasons, the music is shorter than the original broadcast. I hope you enjoy listening. My castaway this week is the director and writer Greta Gerwig. This year, Barbie made her the first woman in cinematic history to have the sole director's credit for a billion-dollar blockbuster. The film takes the titular doll on a fantastical, philosophical journey that's a love letter to Hollywood's golden age and both a celebration and critique of all that Barbie herself represents. Greta was born in Sacramento, California, where she grew up with big passions, everything from fencing to ballet. She initially dreamed of studying musical theatre, but first found acclaim acting in indie films so understated they were sometimes called mumblecore. And then she went behind the camera. First, there was Lady Bird, inspired in part by her own noughties childhood, about a teenage girl dreaming of moving to New York to make art with a capital A. The film was nominated for 5 Oscars. Little Women followed, meticulously faithful to its 1860s setting, but contemporary in its focus. It was another huge success, earning 6 Oscar nominations and 1 win. She says, "I think young Greta wouldn't believe it. I think she'd be proud that I found a voice as a writer and filmmaker. I always wanted to, but I wasn't always certain that I could, that I was worthy of it. So I hope she'd be proud." Greta Gerwig, welcome to Desert Island Discs.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a big honour.
We're thrilled to have you. So, Greta, you were in the eye of the storm this year in what many regard as the cultural phenomenon of the year, Barbenheimer, the simultaneous release at the cinema of Barbie and Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer. What did it feel like to be caught up in that moment?
Honestly, I mean, it was such an extraordinary moment of when it was released and came into the world. And then there was this overwhelming sense of everyone's going to the movies again. I don't know, for me, so much of when Noah Baumbach and I wrote the script and what was the dream of making it was really this hope of like everyone being in cinemas again. Mm-hmm. And that was because we wrote it during, you know, we started really writing it in March of 2020. And that was just, there was no movies. You know, we weren't gathering. And I kind of thought, well, if we ever do this again, let's make the most bananagrams thing that let us get away with that you would want to be together for.
I know that as well. Barbie was somewhat forbidden fruit for you as a kid.
My mom wasn't so into Barbie for, you know, certain moms would be like, I don't know if this is a good example of womanhood or, you know, the body type and everything was, she was less excited about that. But I got hand-me-downs from girls in the neighborhood where I was growing up. And so I got a lot of pre-loved dolls. Although my mom, I will give her credit. She did give me a doll, a proper doll for Christmas in a box. She relented. Yeah. And then I destroyed her.
Time for your first disc, Greta. What have you chosen?
Okay, so this my list is extremely musical heavy because that's the truth of who I am. So the first one is A Chorus Line, the original cast recording. And I like these original cast recordings that you can feel the room. It's less pristine as a recording, but it's more, you can feel the sweat almost, which is lovely. And this is the kind of opening of all of the dancers auditioning to be in this musical, but I loved it for my whole life. And I had this sort of like yearning to be part of something. God, I hope I get it. Like I felt like I was born with that yearning. It was just endless for me.
God, I hope I get it. I hope I get it. How many people does he need?
How many people does he need?
I hope I get it. I hope I get it. How many boys, how many girls? How many girls? Look at all the people.
I really need this job. Please, God.
Hope I Get It, from the musical A Chorus Line by Marvin Hamlisch and Edward Cleaban, performed by Dan Pippin and the Broadway cast with the Chorus Line Orchestra. Greta Gerwig, you were born and brought up in Sacramento in California. Your dad, Gordon, worked for a credit union. Your mum, Christine, was an obstetrics and gynaecology nurse. You've described them as culturally ravenous and as artists without being artists. How did they share that creativity with you?
Well, I mean, there was a record collection in my house, which is where, honestly, a lot of things come from. Mm-hmm. It was lots of different stuff, but it was also... It was like Steve Martin's stand-up album and stuff like... It was just this connection to other things like music and comedy and theater. And it was... We had recordings of plays, which they used to put on records. And then they would take me to everything that there was. I mean, there was a symphony in Sacramento, which we went all the time. It was like a lot of like... Let's go to absolutely everything there is to offer in Sacramento. And then my dad had a couple of work trips to New York, and I went to New York, and I have very formative memories. There was almost a version of this list that had, I saw 42nd Street. It must have been 1990. I was about five. The Rush tickets, you're always in the front row because, you know, nobody wants to stare straight up. And I was small enough that I remember just standing when they did We're in the Money and they dance on those giant coins. I couldn't believe it. So I felt like they gave me all this access, and then they also just kept allowing for it. Like, they were like, she's interested and let's keep going. I don't think they ever thought I was actually going to do it.
It was a hobby. It was a kind of, you know, a richness that you could add to your life, but it wasn't what you were going to do for a living.
Yes. Well, because it seems we just didn't know anyone who did it for a living.
So at what point did your performance gene kick in then? You're born in 1983, youngest of three. Mm. You know, were you the type of kid who would be putting on shows for the family, for your parents, for your siblings?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was always putting on shows. I was that kid.
There's a look on your face, Greta Gerwig, that I can only describe as rueful at this point.
Now as a parent, you are like, oh man, I really made my parents sit through just... I was constantly... And I was also doing it all the time... On the playground or at school, I was trying to organize other kids into reenacting plays I'd seen. I remember, I must have been in kindergarten, explaining to all the kids what the story of Starlight Express was and that I would be playing Rusty. And I was like, no, no, we're all trains and we're being played with. And we're the steam engines, but they're these electric trains that are coming. And they were like, what are you talking about? And I was like, and we're all on roller skates, but I know we're not. So we're going to have to pretend to be. And I think I had a sort of force of will that made people just sort of go with it in some way. I couldn't think of anything more that I wanted to do than organize fantasy play with that was like what I did.
Listen, we've got to make room for the music, Greta. Yeah. Your second choice. Tell me about this disc.
Yeah.
What are we going to hear next?
This is Pinball Wizard by The Who. And I will say, even of my rock and roll choices, they're pretty musical theatery. I guess to the kind of just me as a child, like the part of me that was like too much and too crazy, it was like that kind of rock and roll of that time period was like, there is no too much, you can go for it. This never fails to just make me excited. Like when you hear some of those chords, you're like, yes!
Ever since I was a young boy, I played the silver ball. From Soho down to Brighton, I must have played them all. But I ain't seen nothing like him in any amusement hall. That deaf, dumb, and blind kid sure plays a mean pinball.
Pinball Wizard by The Who. Yeah. So Greta Gerwig, you've described yourself as a child of big emotions. Mm. Intense, I think, is another word that you've used. Tell me more about that. Tell me more about you when you were young.
I had intense loves and passions. And I mean, when I was young, I wanted to be a dancer. I had studied ballet. I would have spent 7 days a week there for as long as I could have done it. I had to be sort of kept from things. My mom was worried, I think, that I would get too obsessive about things.
You would get fixated on a thing.
Yeah, and I think I realize now that that kind of fixation is not, not everyone feels that, but I had that sort of level of fixation.
Sadly, ballet didn't work out for you, but your mum persuaded you to take up fencing and you became one of the best in the state.
Yeah, I did. I did. I went for it because I was intense and because I had all this kind of drive. I think sports were a very good place for me to put that because I think there's a real structure in sports that allows for that. And it was sort of my competitiveness was fine.
So that was always in you as well.
Yeah. No, I got that from my grandfather. He'd say, well, I'll play around a cribbage for you to find out who takes out the trash. And they'd be like, well, all right, I'll do it. And I think I just kind of got that competitiveness. You know, I'm still that way.
You took that from him. What about your relationship with your mum, Christine? She was ferrying you to all of these activities. What was the relationship like between the two of you? How do you describe it back then?
I was very stubborn. She was very stubborn. She's really, extroverted and funny and outward. And so am I. And I think there was like 14 to 18 was an extremely stressful time. You know, you don't come to the breakfast table wearing your pajamas. You come fully dressed because if you came in your pajamas, she'd say, well, that's your way of letting me know that you're not ready for anything life has to bring to you today. Like, it was
so
like
expectations.
It was like shot out
high.
Of a cannon.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like every day. It was like and my dad, who's more somewhat more internal, and like she'd sign him up for the bridge club. She's very good at getting everyone activated.
Sounds like she would have made a good director.
She would have made a good director. She would make a lot of good things. She's one of the truly great characters of, I think, I would say the 20th century. She's just fabulous.
So she was scheduling all of the whole family, but yeah, many, many activities for you. Why do you think you needed so much stimulation as a kid?
I mean, I had ADHD. I've been diagnosed as an adult, but I didn't know. There wasn't, I don't know, maybe testing wasn't as prevalent. I think I needed a lot of a high level of engagement.
Did diagnosis give you a new perspective on all that?
Yes. It was like, oh, all of these behaviors fall into a pattern? Oh, like, I almost felt silly that I hadn't recognized that before. Mm-hmm. But I was like, oh, that makes sense. I think that's why I love directing so much and being on film set so much, is because it's long hours and it's all encompassing and it's sort of however much you can ask of yourself to do, there's always more. That gives me a sense of calm.
It's time for some more music, Greta. What's next?
Sleigh Ride by Johnny Mathis. Johnny Mathis, I love his voice. My dad loved Johnny Mathis too. And my dad and I have a tendency to break into song. And this song has these sections that are, they just keep going. You can't believe that the song keeps going. And it's like, there's a section that's like, these wonderful things are the things we'll remember all through our lives. These wonderful things are the things we'll remember all through our lives. Just hear those. And you're like, oh my God, it's still happening. It's like we went up an octave and we're still going. And I feel like it has this almost like joy mania. Like there's something about it where it's like, I love this song so much. It makes me just thrilled.
There's a happy feeling nothing in the world can buy. When they pass around the coffee and the pumpkin pie, it'll nearly be like a picture print by Courier and Ives. These wonderful things are the things we remember all through our lives. These wonderful things are the things we remember all through our lives. Just hear those sleigh bells jingling, ring, ting, tingling too. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you.
Sleigh Ride, Johnny Mathis with Percy Faith and his orchestra. Greta Gerwig, you went to an all-girls Roman Catholic high school, and when you were about 12 in seventh grade, you had a formative moment. A teacher pinned a short story that you'd written up on the board in front of the whole class. It was based on a real-life experience you'd had during a maths test. What exactly happened?
Oh, God, this is so embarrassing. It's still embarrassing. It was the first time I'd changed classes and there was all these people and lockers and it just, I felt intimidated. And anyway, we were taking a math test. We were taking a math test and I had to go to the bathroom, but I didn't know. And then I just was like one of those awful moments where I had peed my pants in seventh grade. And I was during a math test for placement. And the thing that happened, which was actually so lovely, is a girl across from me saw what was happening. I started crying. I mean, even telling it now, I just feel so sad. And I was like ashamed. And she had a sweatshirt and she took it off and she said, she sort of gestured, wrap it around yourself so no one sees. And she gave me her sweatshirt. And then I sort of ran out of the room. And it was this moment of just like, just kindness. And then I was so embarrassed. I like went to the office.
How interesting that you chose to write about that.
So, okay.
Because
so
you're emotional just talking about it now. Your eyes are glossy. You're like,
I'm embarrassed by it.
It's quite brave.
Yeah, well, so I did it. I wrote about it in eighth grade. I think it was one of the first personal essay assignments. And she pinned it on the board. And I thought I was just turning it into her and it would just be for her. And then it was all of a sudden on the board, and then everybody knew that it had happened to me, if I'm remembering correctly. I think I wrote about it as if it was funny, but I still was like just so embarrassed by it. In a way, I think at the time I tried to turn it into something funny very quickly. And
to take the sting out.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
But, you know, write what you know.
Yes, exactly. That's the beginning of that.
Greta will find out what happened next in a minute, but it's time to go to the music. Your fourth choice today, what's it going to be?
Okay, so this is And the Grass Won't Pay No Mind by Elvis Presley. I didn't really love Elvis. Elvis wasn't my person, but a friend of mine said, wait, you got to listen to it. And I remember this song was like when it clicked for me, what people were hearing in it. I don't know that anything beats like a friend or someone you respect saying, like, try it again. You've missed it. Try it again.
Listen easy. You can hear God calling. Walking barefoot by a stream. Come unto me. Your hair softly falling. On my face as in a dream. And the time will be.
And the grass won't pay no mind. Elvis Presley. Greta Gerwig, after high school, you applied to a number of colleges to study musical theatre and you didn't get in. How did you handle the rejection?
I started comedy. Not that I was the best at comedy. It was just comedy was, even if you weren't good at comedy, they always need a straight man to have the other people be funny around.
So you responded to the rejection by diversifying.
Yeah, that's right. I was like, now I'm going to do this. And I think at that point, I knew that there were lots of different ways to be part of the world of show people. That's what I like. I liked actors. I liked writers. I liked dancers, singers, directors, production designers, lighting designers, stage managers, people who made things, people who created these, you know, fictions. And I was like, well, there's got to be a spot for me in all of this because it is a job. And I think that was a big part of moving to New York is how much I saw just people who were normal, everyday people who worked at it. And that felt made it more like something I could possibly do.
So you moved to New York and you studied English and philosophy there, started acting in mumblecore films like Hannah Takes the Stairs. They were low budget, mainly improvised. Do you think of yourself as an actor as well as a director today?
Yes, because I think it's part of who I am. It all goes together for me. Like one of the ways that I felt that I learned how to write was by acting. You know, you realize why someone like Tennessee Williams is a great writer when you try to memorize it and act it. It's almost like some door, or this is my experience of it, some door opens inside you, and then you're in a room where all the choices are right. There's a ton of possibilities and everything is alive.
You also once said about acting, I sometimes can't get rid of who I am.
Yes, that's definitely true. I wish I could more. Sometimes it feels like I have, and then I see it and I'm like, ugh. there you are.
Like, I love the derision with which you said well, like that. Why is that so terrible?
Well, I guess you sort of hope that someone else showed up, you know? Because, you know, when you're acting, you know, you feel you're in this imagined world. And maybe you even have a picture in your head of someone who's other than you. And then it's just your face. I mean, it's always going to be your face. And you think, oh, God, there I go.
Credit going. It's time for your next choice. Tell us about your fifth disc. What is it and why are you taking it to the island?
This is Moon Age Daydream by David Bowie. I think this is, sounds wild, but I truly think if David Bowie hadn't existed, I wouldn't have made anything. I think he's so... I remember when I heard him for the first time, because for some reason, David Bowie wasn't actually in the record collection. So I didn't hear David Bowie until I was in college. I was like 18 and I couldn't believe that it existed. Yeah, it's like it tripped some wire in me that it had always been there. And then I was like, oh, there it is, it's Bowie. And that lyric, keep your electric eye on me, I didn't know what it meant, but it felt like, what is this? And I wrote it on everything, all my notebooks, all my everything, text, anything. I would write, keep your electric eye on me. It had a weight.
Coming for you, I'm the space invader. I'll be a rock and rolling bitch for you. Keep your mouth shut, just smoking like a big monkey bird. And I'm busting up a brain for the world. Keep your
Moon Age Daydream, David Bowie. Greta Gerwig, your partner, is the screenwriter and director Noah Baumbach, and the two of you often collaborate. You co-wrote Barbie, as you mentioned earlier. One of your first collaborations was Frances Ha in 2012. Now, at that point, Noah was the more established filmmaker and your contribution wasn't always acknowledged. What was that like? It must have been annoying.
Yeah, well, now it's the opposite, because now when Noah and I are on the street... No, just in terms of Frances in particular, people stop and say, you know, I love Francis and it means so much, and they'll totally ignore him. And then sometimes I'll be like, well, you know, actually he directed it. I didn't direct that one. He directed it. And they kind of look at him like, oh, well, good for you. But like, but it's funny because I feel like now, and he's like, it's okay. You don't ever have to do that. You don't have to tell people.
The two of you are both pretty competitive, I think. Are you competitive with each other?
Yeah, but not in the way that you'd think. It's more that, like, he's so disciplined and just, he's always on, the only way I know how to describe it is he's always on the writing channel. I can be on other people's channels and then it takes me a while to sort of snap into it. He can sit down and just start working, and it's so amazing and totally annoying to me. But it's not really about outcome. It's like his ability to just focus instantly.
Yeah.
And he just sits down at the dining room table and there's kids all around him and he's just working.
Just doing it.
And it has no problem doing it.
You obviously really inspire each other, but I wonder how it went in 2020, because his film Marriage Story and your film Little Women were both up for Oscars in the same category, weren't they?
That was actually lovely. That was great, because there was a celebration of both of the things we were making, and that was amazing. That was not...
Did you get to vote, though?
Oh, yeah, yeah, we voted. We voted for ourselves. We did check with each other ahead of time. Yeah, it felt so unique.
Greta, your breakthrough as a director came in 2017 with the film Lady Bird. While you were on set, you wore some talismanic footwear. It had been given to you by two other women directors. Who gave you the shoes?
This was early. I'd worked with Rebecca Miller, and she said she had a pair of shoes that were the wrong size, and did I want them? And they were this, like, lovely British, like men's shoes.
Like a brogue.
Yeah, brogue, yeah. And they were beautiful. And I was like, these were my lucky shoes and they're great. I still wear them all the time, especially on days when I was like, I need luck on set. And then I had worked with the director, Mike Mills, and his wife, Miranda July. Also, it's weirdly the same thing. She said, I have these shoes, they don't quite fit. Do you want them? And I was like, this is too crazy. Like, if you wrote this, no one would believe it. It's too poetic. These women giving me, directors giving me their shoes. I'm pretty superstitious and pretty mystical. I don't know. I'm always on the lookout for signs. I'll say that.
See two pretty clear ones there.
Yeah, I think that was sort of like, if you don't do it now, don't say that there weren't signs, you know, that they you were told. So if you don't do it, you're denying what's being put in front of you.
Greta, it's time for your next piece of music. Disc number 6, please. What have you got for us?
This is Top Hat, White Tie and Tails, sung by Fred Astaire from the 1935 musical Top Hat. For a long time, I had a fantasy that I would have... Oh, I mean, this was from childhood, but like that I'd have a wedding where a bunch of men... who were tap dancing, this is so strange, were tap dancing and wearing like full tuxedos.
Yes.
As I walked down the aisle and they'd be singing. And I...
Greta, I want this for you.
I know. In my fantasy, there's not really a groom. It's just me in this like male...
sort of generalized
yes.
tap chorus.
Exactly.
Who's
and I think dead? This Fred Astaire is like a reminder of that.
I just got an invitation through the mail. Your presence requested this evening, it's formal, a top hat, a white tie, and tails. Nothing now could take the wind out of my sails. Because I'm invited to step out this evening with top hat, white tie, and tails. Oh, I'm putting on my top hat, tying up a white tie, brushing off my tails. I'm duding up my shirt front, putting in the shirt studs, polishing my nails.
Top Hat, White Tie and Tails from the film Top Hat, composed by Irving Berlin and performed by Fred Astaire with Johnny Green and his orchestra. Greta Gerwig, your film sets are known by cast and crew alike to be very supportive environments. I think you've referred to it as a bubble of safety. How does that help you creatively?
I think people make something better when they feel safe. So I try to give them that safety and then... I don't want all of the ideas to be mine. I certainly have ideas, but I don't want to clone myself 100 times or 200 times. I want them to bring me things that I never would have thought of, because that's the fun of making movies, is they're totally collaborative. I want to see what I don't know yet. And I want every person, once they're on the set, to feel that they are the keeper of the story, whether they're a PA or an actor or dolly grip. And I think people need to feel safe in order to make suggestions or because I'm not going to do everything everybody suggests, but that's okay. I mean, listen, if you've got an idea of how to do this, like, let's try it.
It's time for your penultimate disc, Greta. What's it going to be?
So this is the reprise or the finale of Camelot in the original cast recording with Richard Burton. I chose the reprise because it's sad. And also, you know, it's like at the end, his kingdom is falling apart. Everything's a mess. And he's recounting what it was. And I thought, well, for me, my feeling on the desert island, recounting what it had been. Don't let it be forgot. There, you know, once was a spot. That kind of ache of what's already gone was part of it. And Richard Burton has my favorite voice of all time.
Where once it never rained till after sundown. By 8 a.m. the morning fog had flown. Don't let it be forgot that once there was a spot for one brief shining moment.
The finale from Camelot by Frederick Lowe and Alan J. Lerner, performed by Richard Burton with the original Broadway cast and the Camelot Orchestra. Greta Gerwig, art sometimes comes from dark and difficult places, but the tone of your work is generally hopeful. We leave the cinema feeling that actually people are good. Was that a choice you made early on?
It's not really a choice so much as I think I must believe it. You know, obviously there's very many things in the world that are, there's a lot of obvious pain and everything else, but I think I believe in people. I'm not negative about it all. although I can have melancholy about it. But I hope we find the best way to go forward. And we don't always, obviously. But I do love people.
You once said you like living in New York because I like seeing people, running into people. I wouldn't do well alone in the woods.
No,
now, this worries me because of the desert island, Greta.
I know. That's why this was so hard.
Yes. How will you cope on the desert island, do you think, all alone?
The thing that is great is I can really just try to memorize all of Shakespeare, which you can. You can do it. So that could just be, you know, that could take years.
That'd keep you busy.
That would keep you busy for a while.
Okay, well, that's the plan. One more track before you go.
Okay.
Your final choice today, what's it going to be?
Okay, well, this is Ain't Got No, I Got Life, Nina Simone. I think I'm attracted to voices, obviously. I know I said Richard Burton was the greatest, but Nina Simone was the greatest. They're all the greatest, but Nina Simone is the pain and the joy in her voice is both. And I also thought, given that I'm on a desert island, this was a sort of celebration of what you have and not what's missing.
Got my heart, got my soul, got my back, I got my sick. I got my arms, got my hands, got my fingers, got my legs, got my feet, got my toes, got my liver, got my blood, I've got life.
Nina Simone and Ain't Got No, I Got Life. So Greta Gerwig, I'm going to send you away to the island. I'm giving you the Bible, the complete works of Shakespeare, and you can take one other book of your choice. What would you like?
Okay, this was a torturous thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I decided on was the complete works of Emily Dickinson. She gets at, you know, mortality and loneliness, but then the joy of finding things that you would only find in silence or emptiness, which I think you probably need that voice on a desert island.
You can also have a luxury item, Greta. What do you fancy?
I just know I would go absolutely bananas if I didn't have something to write with. Anything, any pen and paper is fine. I will write on anything. But there's a brand called National Brand that has green paper, which apparently is good for your eyes. I don't know if that's true. And it has really narrow rule pages. And then I love Smithson paper, that thin blue paper. And that is a true luxury item. And then pens, I like the Micron pens. Those are good. 0.1 is the thickness I like.
I wasn't expecting this level of detail.
Oh, sorry.
I love it. You can't go too granular for me. I'm loving it.
Okay, yeah. So that, and then if I could pick a typewriter, it would be an IBM Selectric 2.
Oh, wow.
But I don't know if I can plug anything in. But typewriters,
like if I can get a solar panel on one of those.
Okay,
happy.
It's like the typewriter of like offices in the 80s, and when you plug it in and then you turn it on, it sounds like the Death Star. It's like and it's like it's a sound that makes me feel like, okay, good, now it's time to write. And I feel like I like switching between like writing by hand and then writing on a typewriter, because you can type. I can type faster than I can write by hand.
Okay. This is going to take me some time to pull together, but I can tell you that I'm going to get you a selection of writing accoutrement.
Okay, great. I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Greta Gerwig, finally, which one track of the 8 that you've shared with us today would you rush to save from the waves first if you had to?
That's terrible. What do you... Are you giving me 8?
It's the worst question.
And
that's why we do it last.
And then you say one?
I know.
What?
I know.
Oh, God. I mean, the truth is it's Sleigh Ride by Johnny Mathis is what I'd save. It's the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then in that case, I will just say, Greta Gerwig, thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs.
Thank you.
And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Hello, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Greta. May every day be Christmas Day on her island. We've cast away many film directors, including Gurinder Chadha, Baz Luhrmann, Steve McQueen and Steven Spielberg. The studio manager for today's programme was Sue Mayo, the assistant producer was Tim Bano, and the producer was Paula McGinley. The series editor is John Gowdy. Next time, my guest will be the food writer and broadcaster, Delia Smith. I do hope you'll join us.
To know what it means to be Roman, you need to look beyond the sweating gladiators. There are fresh stories to be told from scattered clues and new discoveries. I'm Mary Beard, and I'll be uncovering these stories for Being Roman, a new series for BBC Radio 4. There's a young bride avenging the murder of her parents, and an emperor flirting outrageously with his nervous teacher. Listen to Being Roman wherever you get your podcasts.